Hey, I'm Mark Oppenheimer, sitting in today for Colin McEnroe on The Colin McEnroe Show, and we're going to be talking about podcasting. We have a superstar lineup of people who are involved in the podcast world. I want to welcome to our show today, in no particular order, Nicole Taylor. She's the host of Hot Grease, a podcast on Heritage Media Network. Hey, Nicole.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark.
It is my pleasure. We also have Matthew Lieber. He's the co-founder and president of Gimlet Media. Hey, Matthew.
Hi, Mark. Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming. And it's Gimlet, not Gimlet, right?
That's correct.
I've been mispronouncing that drink in bars up and down the East Coast for 2 decades now.
That's embarrassing, but we forgive you.
It is embarrassing. It shows how uncommitted a drinker I am. We have Jenna Weiss-Berman, who's the director of audio at BuzzFeed and who used to work for public radio. Hi, Jenna.
Hey, how you doing?
Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
And also Nicholas Kwa, who's the founder of Hot Pot, a podcasting newsletter, and he also works in audience development at Panoply. Hi, Nicholas.
Hello.
Thanks for coming. So I'll start with a little story of my own, which is about 2 years ago, I was working on a piece for This American Life, and I was working with this producer named Sarah Koenig, and we were about, you know, I would say halfway through the lifespan of producing this segment, which ended up being a few months. And she said, you know, I got to hand you off to someone else because I'm doing this other thing. And I said, Sarah, we're old buds. I've been pitching you stuff and you've been saying no for 10 years. And now you say yes and you're going to hand me off to someone else. And she said, well, I just got this other thing going and nothing personal. I'm handing everyone else off. And you know, maybe it'll come to fruition, but probably not. And so she handed me off to the terrific Jonathan at This American Life. And then like 6 months later, that other thing hit and it was Serial. And it introduced probably several million people to podcasting who may or may not have listened to them before. And it certainly opened up the world of podcasting to the point where people like my dad were saying, how do I download this thing? Like what button on my computer do I press? But of course, podcasting is not that new, and I guess I want to start with Nicholas. And since you write this newsletter that is a must read for people in the podcasting world, and I want to invite our listeners out there to call us at 860-275-7266 and give our questions about podcasting to the whole panel. But let's start with you and say, can you talk a little bit about the evolution of this medium? What's the backstory? How old is it? And has there been growth in the last year or two, or is that just my perception?
Oh, well, so the most important thing to actually understand about podcasting is that it's not necessarily a medium. Podcasting is a distribution method, and that's very key to understanding just where we're going and sort of where we are right now. Podcasting as a distribution method is about 10 years old. We just crossed the 10-year anniversary mark about 1 or 2 weeks ago. And it was created essentially based on the technology that powers the idea of RSS feeds. And it's just a method for a lot of people to get, you know, certain audio files from point A to point B across the internet in an on-demand fashion.
So
go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, so how is it different from radio?
So radio is broadcast. Radio is a thing that's piped over the airwaves, and it's persistent. It's ever-streaming. It happens, and it goes on. It lives without you. With a podcast, it's bottled. The ad metaphor I like to use is a running... radio is a running stream, and podcast is a bottled water. And if you sort of follow through in that metaphor, you can kind of see where the problems are and what the differences are between the two mediums, the two distribution channels, I mean.
Do we have a sense right now, Nicholas, of how do we measure how big the distribution through podcasting has gotten?
We have a sense if you wanted to aggregate the top 100 podcasts on iTunes, you get a sense of a couple of million listeners. I mean, depends on what you're looking for. Are you talking about in terms of the audience size? Are you talking about audiences per show? Where exactly are you looking for them here?
Well, where should we look at them? I mean, if we're to compare it, if we're to get a sense of its cultural impact versus radio, versus television, what's the best metric to think about?
Well, the best metric would be to think about how sort of the Nielsen numbers that came out, just the number of people who, you know, actually have heard of podcasts, and B, listen to podcasts regularly, and C, the sort of spectrum that happens between. I'm pretty sure Matt Lieber at Gimlet has a much better sense of how he wants to tackle that question from a business standpoint. But for me, I operate primarily as an observer, I kind of think that the footprint is still relatively small, but it's growing steadily.
Okay. Well, I want to get to Matt in a second, but first I want to ask Jenna, because Jenna, you now work for BuzzFeed, which is an online-only publication, but you used to work for public radio. So something, maybe a big fat paycheck, I don't know, but something made you decide to switch out of traditional terrestrial radio or NPR and public, which is different from public radio, but that world into the online world, which includes producing podcasts. So why did you make that move?
Right. I mean, the paycheck doesn't hurt, but it's definitely not.
Jenna, was the paycheck much bigger?
It was not much bigger, actually. It was, and you know, and NPR in D.C. pays really well. A lot of the affiliate stations pay a lot less, so and a lot of the shows pay less, and then some of the shows like This American Life pay really well. So it's sort of a grab bag, but I am doing fine here at BuzzFeed. But the main thing was that I felt like I really wanted to. I wanted more creativity, and there was an interesting article recently, actually in Current, the public radio publication, about this exact issue. And I think that is the reason that a lot of people are kind of leaving for new podcast companies, is that there's a lot more kind of room for us to be creative. You don't have to be at a show for, you know, 15 years before you get any kind of creative control. I loved public radio and I loved the shows I worked on, but I wanted to try something really new, and I also wanted to try something really different. So the first show that we launched here it's hosted by two young Black women, and that is a host demographic that is very often left out of a public radio, and a listening demographic too. So and I wasn't seeing too many changes happening in that realm in public radio, and I thought maybe I could try something on the outside that hopefully would influence the inside a bit. And I'm gonna argue a little bit with Nick when he says that podcasting is just a distribution system. It obviously that's true, but I think that podcasting has really taken on a life of its own, and I'm excited to be a part of that. I think it is something that, like, the shows that I'm working on, we're never going to try to appeal to, you know, 15 million person Morning Edition audience. That's never going to be our goal. So the impact, I don't think, is just measured by numbers. It's also, you know, we've been getting really great coverage, and we get these beautiful emails all the time saying, like, I've never heard my voice reflected, you know, on the radio. And so there's that kind of impact. And I think that when you're kind of looking for smaller but more devoted audiences, it can be really creatively freeing in a lot of ways. So I'm excited to be doing this.
Matthew, I do want to ask, because Nick had suggested that you might have a different way of thinking about the metrics. Your group, Gimlet Media, it involves several people who used to be on more traditional public radio shows like This American Life, and you've left, and your distribution is not on the radio at all, right? It's now exclusively through the podcasting channels.
That's right.
And so do you agree with Jenna about some of the advantages? And also, do you agree that it's more than just a distribution, that it's also like allows for a different kind of artistry?
Yeah, I do. It is a distribution mechanism, but I would argue it's also a medium. Like, it's a different container in which to deliver audio. And so I see, like, an incredible amount of creativity happening in podcasting in a way that I really haven't heard from radio in years. Sorry, there's a phone ringing in this room.
That old-fashioned media, the telephone.
I know, we've got old meeting new. And I think, like, Gimlet has kind of a point of view about what really works in podcasting, and it's a little different than radio. Like, we're for a couple reasons. One is, like, if you make a radio show, it has to be a certain the distribution mechanism. I don't think that much about, but it has to be a certain length. Like, you have a clock. I bet if you looked up in your studio right now, Mark, like, there would be an image of a clock that's either 60 minutes long, and all the content you have, at some point we'll have a break in this hour, and that break will be a fixed time. So our segments are fixed. In podcasting, you don't have that. Like, a podcast can be however long or however short it needs to be to serve the story or serve the audience. And then two is, if you want to get to a big audience in radio, the way you have to do it is you have to own a broadcast tower. So you have to have an AM/FM broadcast tower, and you have to have a license from the FCC, or you have to go around to a number of essentially station managers in different markets around the country one by one and convince them that they should take your show and expose it to their audience. And so I think you just get a different like kind of risk profile that comes with the show that needs to be approved by a number of gatekeepers than you get if you make a show that you can simply make and hit a button and distribute. And we think what works in the medium is just is of podcasting is a little different, and I'm happy to talk about what those things are that we believe, although we're a year into our company, so we're still learning.
Well, definitely. I want to get to that. I want to remind our listeners that I'm Mark Oppenheimer, sitting in for Colin McEnroe on The Colin McEnroe Show. And today we're talking about podcasting, the way that it's a different distribution channel, but also the way that it might be a different medium, that artistry might be different on shows like Reply All or The Mystery Show or Serial, which many of you have heard. In a second, I want to get to Nicole Taylor, who has started her own show, Hot Grease, which is a podcast on Heritage Media Network. But first, I want to listen. We actually have a clip of Hot Grease that I think we should listen to before welcoming Nicole. So here it is.
You're in the business of chicken and waffles.
Yes.
I mean, some people say that waffles, the whole chicken and waffle craze was born at Wales.
Yeah, that's what I say too.
Legendary, really club. It wasn't a restaurant in Harlem, USA.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, that's like what, you know, me and Sam, my partner, Sam, he's from Brooklyn originally. And, you know, when we first opened up, everybody said, oh, who's from the South? You know, and we do have Southern, you know, we have a Southern flair. I like to say we have a Southern flair with a Harlem shake. But,
you know,
that's our little catchphrase. But we when we did it, we said, you know, listen, man, this is a New York dish. You know, it may have gotten famous in Cali. People may think it's from the South, but it's really from New York.
All right. That's Nicole Taylor of the show Hot Grease talking with John Seymour, right?
Yeah, from Sweet Chicks.
Do you want to tell us about your show? Like, why are you in podcasting? Is it because of the lower barriers to entry? Is it because of the different kind of artistic freedom that you have? What brought you into this channel?
I've been in food, doing different things in food for quite some time. And I moved to New York City and found out about Heritage Radio Network. Which Heritage Radio Network is in the garden of Roberta's Pizza, which is like a hipster DIY restaurant empire. And at the time when I started Hot Grease, there were only like 10 shows. There weren't a lot of podcasts at the time. And I pitched the show to them saying, hey, there's a lot of great things happening around food right now, but I don't hear enough black and brown voices in that conversation. So I said Hot Grease will be the show that lifts those voices up in food. So for 5 years, I did a podcast where I interviewed folks right in the Garden of Roberta's.
So how many episodes have you done, Nicole?
I've done 167 episodes of Hot Grease, and I took a break to write a book for like a year and a half, and now I'm back trying to reformat in this new storytelling way. It's been challenging, but I'm having fun.
Can you say something about the economics of this? I mean, I assume you don't have a team of five doing that. Do you do everything yourself? And is there any revenue coming in?
No. Yes and no. So when I started on Heritage Radio Network, of course, there was an engineer there. There were two or three other people that helped with the, you know, putting together the show, but it was very lo-fi. You know, bring someone in the studio, interview them. You know, I'd do a little prep. But since transitioning to trying to do a more storytelling format, I've partnered with a well-known sound engineer and editor. And it's just me and her. We have an intern this summer who's been doing a lot of transcribing. But she leaves in August, and we were just having a meeting last night about, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with all this tape that needs to be transcribed? To answer your question about are we making money, I would say no. However, I've been able to turn this podcasting thing into other opportunities, i.e. a book or speaking engagements or writing opportunities. So it hasn't paid directly, but indirectly, I've been able to leverage the podcast.
I'm Mark Oppenheimer, sitting in for Colin McEnroe on The Colin McEnroe Show. We're taking your calls on the history and the present state of podcasting at 860-275-7266. Before we go to a break, I want to ask all of you, all four of our guests, to say something about the history of podcasting. I mean, does anyone talk about what was the first or what was the first big one? What's the deep backstory to all of this? Nick, do you want to say something about that first, maybe?
Well, I mean, so I think we're going to touch upon this in the next segment when we talk about sort of the cultural history of public radio and how it influences podcasting. But I would say that the early communities of the podcast distribution channel is very much of the tech community. It's a bunch of people sitting around talking about technology-related issues, and they're kind of sending that back and forth within their own communities. And over time, sort of more prescient public radio stations, a lot more prescient radio stations in general, sort of adopting the medium. And I, in my head, at least when I first encountered the form, it was really through This American Life. It is a method for me to gain access to that show when I don't have personally have a radio. And for me, that was my benchmark. But for others, I suspect it's also the same coming out of the public radio relationship.
Jenna, what about for you working in public radio? When did podcasting come onto your radar screen?
Well, I guess I always, early in podcasting, I always just kind of thought of podcasts as a more convenient way to get my favorite public radio shows. So I was listening to This American Life and The Moth and all those that I could have heard on the radio, but you know, part of why podcasting is great is because it's on-demand audio, so you can listen whenever you want. So that was early podcasting for me, for sure.
And Matthew, do you feel like you're in – what's is there synergy with public radio, or is it in competition with it?
I don't think we're in competition with public radio for listeners. I mean, a lot of the things that are great about the best podcasts are things that public radio has been doing for years. You know, like – telling great stories with editorial integrity and real voice and having like creating an authentic connection with the listener. Like those are all things that public radio does an amazing job at. And I actually do feel like we're bringing new listeners into the medium that may discover podcasting through us and then say, well, what else do I want to listen to? And immediately go to This American Life or go to, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or Freakonomics, or Radiolab, or other public radio shows that are big in podcasts. We do compete for talent, yeah. There's not a huge ecosystem of a developed ecosystem of people that know how to do this stuff, and a lot of them are currently working in public radio, like Jenna, and like I used to. I came from public radio, so I was a producer.
Nicole, did you ever feel like, oh, I could go off into podcasting, or maybe I would try to get work in public radio?
Oh, I never even really gave that a thought. I mean, some of the early podcasts that I listened to were definitely public radio podcasts. I was a huge fan of News and Notes when Farai Chadea was a host there. The Splendid Table and KCRW Good Food, which is on the West Coast. But I never even thought about it. I didn't even think it was possible to even get a job with any of those folks or do any work with any of them.
I used to think it was impossible to do radio about food, that food didn't – you couldn't talk about food. You just had to be there. But I'm starting to change my mind. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take your calls about the history and the present of podcasting. 860-275-7266. I'm Mark Oppenheimer in for Colin McEnroe.
I've been listening to Serial. Millions have been listening with me. They know when I say I've been listening to Serial, I don't mean Rice Krispies. Snap, crackle, podcast. That's got me caught like a bass on a line that a rod cast. Good way to get your pod on. All the kids at Woodlawn. Hey, and Adnan, Jay, and Don, and Asian.
I'm Mark Oppenheimer in for Colin McEnroe on The Colin McEnroe Show. He is bicycling around Europe, and if you want to be his Facebook friend, you'll find out a lot about it. We're talking about the history and the present of podcasting today with my guests Nicole Taylor of the show Hot Grease, Matthew Lieber of Gimlet Media, Jenna Weiss-Berman, director of audio at BuzzFeed, and Nicholas Kwa, the founder of Hot Pod, a podcasting newsletter. Hey, Nick, how do people sign up for your newsletter, or is it like invitation only?
Nah, man, it's if you want to sign up for it, you should go to tinyletter.com/hotpod.
tinyletter.com/hotpod. Before we get back into talking about podcasting and the economics of it. And I also want to talk about diversity within it, which is something we began to touch on. And before we take some of your calls at 860-275-7266, we'd love to hear what you think about podcasts. What do you listen to? What do you feel is missing? Is there anything out there in the podcasting ecosystem that you think, if that existed, I would subscribe to that on iTunes, but it doesn't? We'd love to hear from you. But before we do, I want to hear a clip from one of the shows that Gimlet Media produces. This is from Mystery Show.
I have a feeling that if he was 6 foot, he would have said, "I'm happily 6'1". I have a feeling he's 5'11 and a half.
Here's what I think I should do for you. What if I found out how tall Jake was once and for all?
Well, that's good. I think you'd have a better chance of doing it than I would.
So what is the bare minimum you will settle for?
I would settle for word from Jake himself. And if he's like, it's like I wrote on my website, I'm happily 6 feet tall. Like, I'm happy with it. That means I'm right in the middle of it. Boom, 6 foot. Like, I'm just lounging right here at 6 foot. He seems like an honest guy. I would accept that. I would take him at his word.
Okay. So, word from the man himself. Okay. I can do it. I can do it.
All right.
All right. I should have set that up a little better. That's Starlee Kine's Mystery Show, in which she's trying to solve the mystery of just how tall Jake Gyllenhaal, or Gyllenhaal, if you're listening to Gimlet Media, is. She received a request from a cartoonist named David Rees, who claims to be an artisanal pencil sharpener. And he said, I want to know how tall Jake Gyllenhaal is. And so Starlee Kine set out to do that. Matthew, your network produces that show. Is that right?
Yes.
And so could you tell me, like, is that a concept? Is what she's doing, would that ever have worked for public radio? Or is that, is that made for podcasting?
I think it's made for podcasting. And, like, do I think it could ever be on radio? Yeah, I think it could, but it would require a real feat of persuasion to a lot of people. And when you try to, that we don't have to convince in order to get this in front of our audience. I guess what I mean, like, Mystery Show is amazing. Like, we are incredibly proud of it. We think it doesn't sound like anything that came before it. It's hard to describe because it mixes many genres. It's like, it involves real investigation and journalism, but it's also comedy. It feels, it's completely true, 100% true, but sometimes it feels like a fiction film. It feels a little bit more like film than it does like radio. And so if you went and shopped the show around to program directors, local stations, and said, hey, we're going to do a show where we solve mysteries, and one of the mysteries is how tall is Jake Gyllenhaal? I think it's like, when I first heard that, I was like, I don't really quite know what to make of this. I think not having to ask for permission and having the kind of creative latitude to really execute this kind of thing and invest in it, because, you know, Mystery Show requires a small team of producers working for many months in order to make it real. And, you know, we have bands that score each episode with different custom music soundtracks, and we put a lot of artistry into it to make it work. It sounds very easy breezy when it works, but it requires a ton of artifice to make it happen. And I think being able to do that in the radio model, it's not impossible. I mean, but I think it's tougher to convince everyone you need to convince that it's worth doing. Whereas in podcasts, like, there's just less risk, because you don't have to displace another show in order to create a new one.
Well, one of the things that my friends who work in public radio will always talk about is that public radio really, really wants things perfect, that there's a particular aesthetic. Not only do you have to come in just on the second before the music does, I mean, not only is there this perfection of or perfectionism of chronology and timing, but also, you know, they will have you slam a door 20 times to get the right sound of the door slam. And, I've been through this, right? I mean, and it's there's tremendous artifice in it. Does podcasting throw out the artifice, or does it just replace it with a different artifice, one of sort of casualness and one in which you're allowed to say like and That's for any of you, by the way. But you go ahead and start, Matthew.
I'll just say, I think the beauty of podcasting is that it's open to many different kinds of formats. And you see, you hear some shows that are very loose and baggy, totally unedited, but are also like fun and riveting and fresh. And then you hear other shows that are highly edited and like little boutique jewel boxes. If you went around Gimlet Media, you would find a lot of perfectionists. You would find people who are incredibly committed to the excellence of the form. It doesn't sound like radio that you've heard before, but there's a strong belief that it should be great. But great can mean different.
I feel like you come from the heritage of public radio in terms of the sound, like, because when I hear Mystery Show and I really like it, it reminds me a lot of Wiretap, and it you know, when I look at sort of the lineage of all the producers who work on the show, that there are overlaps with the public radio aesthetic and the sound, and also an alignment with the possible public radio audience.
Do you think that's right, Matthew?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, like Starley herself, who's the host and like the creative vision behind Mystery Show, was a producer on This American Life. I mean, in many ways, like Ira Glass is the godfather of all of this that we're doing here at Gimlet, not in all of podcasting, but like a lot of the biggest, most popular shows now are coming out of that tradition of narrative storytelling. And we're certainly putting our twist on it and going in new directions and trying to be fresh, because I think you have to be to get a big audience in podcasting today. But that comes out of public radio for sure.
Jenna, whenever I talk to BuzzFeed people, they will smack you over the head with how they don't care at all what legacy media does. They're, you know, the BuzzFeed pitch you will always get is, you know, we're just doing it the exact opposite. You know, they do clickbait, we don't. They do this kind of headline, we don't. Do you feel that, like, is there a legacy you're responding to? You come out of public radio. Is BuzzFeed doing audio and podcasting totally differently?
Well, something I really like about BuzzFeed is that it's not attached to any specific identity. So, you know, if you're working at the New York Times or at NPR, there are clear expectations of what the tone of what you're working on should be. And they're, you know, you're expected really not to fail. And so I think what I like about BuzzFeed is that it's a lot of different kinds of things. So I wouldn't try to put it in any sort of box. And I think, you know, I was tasked with starting podcasts here, and I was given very little direction in a way that I loved. It was just kind of like, make this happen, do
your
thing.
So how did you decide what to do? When they said, go start podcasts, how did you decide what the podcast world needed from you?
Yeah, well, I knew that we had a very tiny team, so we couldn't put, you know, like three or four people on a show. We could put one producer on each weekly show, which is a challenge, and means that we can't really do, you know, fully produced stories and, you know, in-depth reporting, but that we can do really fun, engaging and segmented talk shows. So somebody named Julia Furlan, she worked here doing kind of audio quiz type stuff for our website before I started, and she had been experimenting with audio, and she'd been talking to people around here who could be potential hosts, and she had talked to a lot of internal talent here. You know, everyone wants a podcast, and like it's like everyone in the world basically right now. I get emails every day.
And yet, all of you say that the talent pool is limited, right? I mean, it's everyone wants to do one, but actually, not that many people are that good at it.
Absolutely.
Yes. that is a fact.
All right, so let's pause for a second. Let's go to a clip from one of your shows, Jenna, that I think is actually doing very well. This is a clip from Another Round.
Some of the emails that really trip me out are emails from well-meaning white people who end up saying really racist like, hey, I'm on your side, but you black girls do your fair share of touching people's hair without permission.
Oh, my
da,
God.
Da, da, da. That's a really
good
email that we got.
The email you're talking about. Because I still think about it.
Right.
It's just, let's not even get into that.
Okay, let's not.
All right.
It's the happy time.
No, I mean, we were talking about hair.
About our hair being touched by white people without permission.
So it was very negative context.
Yeah. Right. Which is the thing that I'm finding a lot of white people don't believe us when we say that.
Yes.
You know, like they need
like
to
genuinely
see
don't
for
believe.
Themselves yeah. before they're like, oh, this really happens to you.
If they would just bother to listen to multiple black girls, especially with natural hair, they would see that this is a thing. I've talked about it multiple times on my show. And really every black girl I know has a story of white people treating her like she's an exhibit at the damn zoo.
So Jenna, let's why don't you tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, so that's our hosts, Heaven Nagatu and Tracy Clayton, interviewing Crystal West, who has an extremely popular podcast called The Read. They have about 200,000 weekly listeners, which is great for a podcast. And, yeah, they were just talking about some of the emails that they get. And mostly we get really loving emails for the show. But they were talking about an email from a white girl who was kind of criticizing them for saying that, for complaining about white people touching their hair without their permission, which is something that has come up on the show quite a bit, something that we get a lot of emails about. It's like, it's a real thing, and it's really annoying. People should stop doing it. So a lot of what they're talking about is, a lot of what they talk about on the show is race, and they talk about it, I think, in a really fun and funny and engaging way. And they were two of the people that we kind of tried out when we were deciding what kind of podcast we were going to have. We had quite a few sets of people sort of sit down and record a few, and we just knew pretty immediately that they were naturals. They'd never done anything like this. Tracy has never listened to a podcast, so it's been a really fun way to get their voices out there.
Tracy had never listened to a podcast? Tracy Clayton?
Never. Still hasn't, still, as far as I know.
So she's pure. Yeah. She's like a Rousseauian babe in the woods, right? She's got like unsullied by Ira Glass or by Glenn Washington or by anyone.
Totally. Yeah.
We're talking.
And we didn't. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say we're talking about podcasting. For those who joined in their cars with their radios, I wanted to say that we're talking about podcasting on the Colin McEnroe Show. I'm sitting in for Colin. I'm Mark Oppenheimer. And our guests are Nicole Taylor, Matthew Lieber, Jenna Weiss-Berman, and Nicholas Kwa. Jenna, were you going to say something else when I cut you off?
Oh, I was just going to say that, yeah, there was something really nice about her never having listened to podcasts, because I think a lot of people, their ears are so trained on these voices that they've been hearing for a while. I know that when I got into radio, I was given like voice lessons on how to sound like a public radio announcer. And there's something kind of really great about them never learning that and us never, like, you know, we've never tried to tell them how their voices should sound when they're recording, obviously. And, you know, just to completely be themselves as much as they can be. And so I think that it's been pretty freeing to have them. Heaven has listened to podcasts, but Tracy just hasn't at all. So it's really her own style.
And now she's forbidden to. She's just like not allowed. So it occurs to me that there's a number of things going on with that podcast, which you wouldn't hear if it were public radio. I mean, there are of course black women on public radio, but it's the untrained voice, right? It's a much more vernacular voice. Number two, they're swearing. And right, which we bleeped out, but they're swearing, and it's not bleeped out on the BuzzFeed podcast feed, I assume. Or is it?
No, it's not bleeped.
It's not. And the advertisers live with that. And then there is a certain frankness in what they're talking about. I mean, Nicole, turning to you for a second, you bring some of those in. I don't think you swear on your show, but you also talk about the South, of all things, which I'm always amazed that when I listen to public radio, there's like one identifiable Southern accent, and that's Wade Goodwin. And when he comes on reporting from Texas, like, you know, it's the Southern guy. And, you know, I'm curious, Nicole, like, how conscious are you of doing things for the diversity of, you know, the podcast world? Or do you just have to be yourself and let that, you know, be as it is?
From time to time, I still deal with the self-confidence thing with the voice, because I'm a Southerner. I have this very Southern voice, as you can tell. But so many people email me and said, we love it. Be yourself. So I try to do that as much as possible. Also with my podcast, I try to bring those voices in, because you don't find them. I mean, there are a ton of food podcasts out here, and you don't hear Southerners at all. And I'll say also, you don't hear a lot of African Americans or black people or people of color really talking in the way that they talk at home. So it's really important that I do that. And one of the reasons why I love Another Round and The Read is because they're themselves completely, and you don't hear those voices on podcasts, and you don't hear them on public radio.
You know, and here it occurs to me, just for the sake of ethics, I should disclose that, you know, as I said at the beginning, I'm working on a podcast. I'm working on it with Panoply, which Nick now works for. And one of the things we're trying to do is it's a Jewish show. It's produced by Tablet, which is an online Jewish magazine. And one of the things we said is, you know, like every other ethnic group or subgroup, we talk amongst ourselves in ways that we don't necessarily talk in mixed company. And it seems to me that one of the things that some podcasts do is they say, we're going to try to invite you into the conversation or some form of it in ways that maybe it isn't had in mixed company. I do wonder, though, I mean, these are always going to be niche audiences, right? Like, how big can a show get if it's three Jews talking or two black women talking, or, you know, I don't know if there's the show out there with Hindus talking or something. But, I mean, is the niche aspect of it baked into concepts like that?
Well, I'll say this, Nicole. I'm always really concerned about, like, am I alienating folks? Should I be talking more about this? Should I explain this in depth? Maybe people don't understand. So it's something that I'm trying to deal with as I'm reformatting my podcast of, like, do I want to stay in this niche or do I want to appeal to a broader audience? I feel in my gut that people want me to just be myself and just bring on guests and tell stories that are just really unique and engaging and not worry about, you know, who's listening so much.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas, which way do you see that going? Are you, as you track the industry and look at sort of the podcast multiplying week by week, are they tending to break off little niches of the big 300 million person American market?
So I wonder about that a lot, because I think the essential tension here is between, like, you know, mass size, breadth, essentially, and sort of depth. And just the nature of podcasts and the way that you experience it is very much up in it. It's very much difficult to participate in that, and the consumption of that medium, to the extent that, like, I think if you are a person who's already consistently listening to a show, you're more bought into the actual content itself and the actual relationship with the host. So I, you know, it's because of just the way that the media is structured and the way that we conduct business and the way we sell ads, you know, large mass amounts of size is the focus, and it is the sort of parlance that we talk about when we talk with advertisers. But I think the real true innovation here is how deep we can go with your specific audience. So maybe, yeah, so your show is coming up, and I can, you know, speak much about it because, you know, it's yours. I'm not gonna take that away from you. If you reach a certain, like, 300K max and you can't really move that needle forward, maybe you're not supposed to. Maybe you're just supposed to go deeper and to make sure that the engagement with 200,000 out of that 300,000 is substantial and it's, you know, quantifiable, and then we can sort of rearrange the conversations we have when we're trying to monetize these shows.
We are going to take a break in just a moment, and when we come back, I really want to talk about the economics of it, because I think that is truly that's the unknown, is how will these things support themselves if they will. So we'll be right back on the Colin McEnroe Show.
I find a podcast that I enjoy, and then I go back and listen to every previous episode all in a row, practically.
Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan and me, Kyone Wolf, with help from our interns Alex Dubin, Allison Ehrenreich, and Hallie St. Germain. Our executive producer is Katie Tolarski. The part of Bill Curry was played by Sarah Koenig. For articles, show pages, and photos, visit our website, wnpr.org/Colin. On tomorrow's show, Mark is back with a conversation about the challenges and rewards of having a big family in 2015. And now, back to Oppie.
I'm Mark Oppenheimer, pretending to be Colin McEnroe today on The Colin McEnroe Show. We're having a great discussion about podcasts. I'm talking with Nicole Taylor, the host of Hot Grease, a podcast on the Heritage Media Network. I'm talking with Matthew Lieber, the co-founder and president of Gimlet Media, which produces Mystery Show, among others. Jenna Weiss-Berman, who's the director of audio at BuzzFeed and who used to produce for public radio. And Nicholas Kwa, who's the founder of Hot Pod, a podcasting newsletter. And he also works in audience development at Panoply.fm. Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
And I want to talk to speak to the question that we started to get into, which is the economics of this. Many of these shows have niches. Many of them probably have super educated, desirable demographic audiences. Maybe some don't. I would love for someone, why don't we say Matthew, to talk about, so what's the money like? How many listeners are you getting, and how much ad revenue is that making for, say, one of your three shows?
So we do last in the last month, we've probably done 4 million total downloads, and that's across an audience of probably roughly a couple million listeners. So which is in the world of podcasts, like actually pretty large scale. If you compare it next to the numbers of web, like people reading the web, like if you put it next to the audience of BuzzFeed, it looks tiny, but in the world of podcasts, it's pretty healthy. The business model that we have working for us right now is an ad-based model. So we place advertisements on our podcasts. You hear sometimes right before the show begins, you'll hear an ad, or sometimes in the middle, you'll hear an ad, in the same way that when you're watching TV, you'll see ads. We try to make our ads a little more listenable or entertaining for listeners, although we're totally transparent about what's an ad and what's editorial. And in terms of this show, I mean, so there's a number of factors in terms of where a show becomes profitable, and it depends on how many producers you have on it. It depends on how big your audience is, how many episodes you put out, and
are your shows profitable?
Yeah, the shows that we have, like at the show level, are essentially profitable businesses. Yes,
and like, is your company in the black?
We're much more focused on growth right now than profitability, because we have three shows right now, but we're in development on a bunch more. So, like, profitability at a company level just isn't something we look at.
Right. And Jenna, what about your shows at BuzzFeed? Are they paying for themselves, and are they paying some chunk of the host's salaries?
Yeah, well, we actually just launched just about 3 months ago, and our plan was to wait a year before we even started looking into sponsorship, but we were lucky enough to have a lot of people approach us, I think, because BuzzFeed is a pretty big name. And so we're just now putting together ad packages, and you'll start hearing ads in about 3 weeks on the shows. So we're
all
not
right.
Totally sure. Yes.
Yeah, so can't wait.
Totally know,
so our listener experience is going to be interrupted in 3 weeks, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
Now, will the ads be from Audible, MailChimp, and Squarespace?
Not so far. They're more in line with what we're doing, and you'll hear more about them. I don't think that the ads have to be, you know, soul-sucking. I think that Gimlet has actually done an incredible job of really doing these, like, beautifully produced, you know, ads that you look forward to. They do these ads where they have, like, little kids reading an ingredient list rather than just doing kind of like a boring read-through. And I think it's really inspired a lot of people. Matt, I hope you don't mind if we do a little bit of copying some of the types of things you've been doing in a different way. But, you know, we want to – I really like how you guys have turned the ads into real little stories themselves.
Matt, cool. You guys are working with Ford, right?
Yeah, Ford Motor Company.
How'd you land them? That's like a big land, right? That's bigger than MailChimp. Like, how'd you – because I would imagine, and I'll put this to all of you, I would imagine that there are advertisers who are skeptical of podcasts. But then you also read articles like Ann Friedman's article from The Times not long ago, in which she said, oh, no, advertisers love podcasts because it's so intimate, because the host is right in your ears, because you can't escape it if you want to get to the other side and hear how the story ends. So, I mean, is this an easier sell for the ads teams, or is this a harder one?
So Ford Motor Company sponsored Season 2 of Startup. They came to us because they were interested in this emerging medium. They also felt like podcasts were pretty connected to cars, because half of the listening to radio in the U.S. happens when people are in cars, and they saw that podcasting was going to be an interesting factor there. And so we did a season-long campaign with them, and we produced it and tried to make it interesting. I think... So my experience with advertisers is that they like podcasts because in today's world of media, like, it's just very fragmented and very noisy. And I think in a really noisy world, podcasts promise a signal. And you'll hear, like, listeners, when they talk about their favorite podcasts, they really have, like, a strong connection to them. And podcasts play, like, almost like a companionship role. And so that's
for the lonely commuter, like, stuck in traffic for 3 hours, like, yeah. You know, Sarah Koenig is your buddy.
Exactly. And right. So that's something that's attractive. I think we haven't seen, I mean, the total market for podcast advertising is not huge. I mean, it's not like we're able to go in and like scoop up television budgets or something like that. I think it's still in the experimental phase, but we're seeing a shift now from the initial set of advertisers who were really focused on what's called direct response. So mm-hmm. the Audibles of the world, the Squarespace of the world that are trying to, you know, get people to take a certain action, like sign up for a service, and seeing a shift more toward brand advertising like a Ford or like a Microsoft who are trying to, you know, create like, you know, create an image in the world and help communicate the story of what they're trying to do.
Sure. Nicole, I noticed that on Hot Grease, which, as you've said, is a one-woman production, that there are ads. So where did those come from? Are you also a sales team?
I am. With the new version of Hot Grease podcast, which is all on SoundCloud, we just recently put out about 4 podcasts from an event down in Austin, Texas. And we partnered with Humanities Texas, which is actually like a nonprofit, I would say. So I would say that I am still actively working on my business model. And I've given myself 3 months to really make some money because I really don't know if my producer and editor will stick around. I'm being but funny, but it's...
But I heard Whole Foods ads on one of your podcasts. Now, was Heritage Radio, was your network putting those in?
Yeah. So okay. Heritage Radio Network now has about 30 shows. They're a nonprofit, actually. But they're most of the, I will say this, that most of the hosts are not getting paid. So that's really just paying for the studio and for production. But I spent 4 years there and never got a dime. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Not yet. Hey, Nicholas, so are there ethical considerations in that we're not talking about yet? I mean, I know that one of the things you hear a lot on podcasts is you hear these host reads, right, where all of a sudden the host, the person you've come to trust, your commuter buddy, will break in and tell you to buy Harry's razors or, you know, Big Pete's granola. And that's not something you hear on public radio where they have different voices giving you the ad sell, such as it is. So is that an ethical consideration? Are there others?
I think the mindset of baseline for the ethical consideration is as long as the listener can unambiguously tell what is part of the content or part of the discussion itself and what is an ad, as long as that is established, and of course that's a subjective line, then everything is sort of in the clear. There are a lot of sort of conditions of positionality and situations in which it could sound or seem like an endorsement, and my sense is that is something that's endemic to the form and would be sort of like fielded out on a case-by-case basis. But wider system-level ethics, this is not public radio, and so we don't run by the same public radio impetus or social responsibilities. And I think from that perspective, I would like to say no, actually. I think it's pretty clear as long as we hold ourselves responsible.
Well, for the most self-centered and least ethically concerned part of this show, I want to turn to all of you in the 2 minutes we have left and ask you for some endorsements of things that we should be listening to. It's a big but young world of podcasting. And first of all, I'd like maybe Nicole to tell us how, if we want to listen to your show, how we can, and then maybe send us to something else you think we should listen to.
Totally. So if you want to listen to all of my older shows, you can go to heritageradionetwork.org and look for Hot Grease, as well as SoundCloud. I have a bunch of new shows on there, a bunch of new audio, and you can put in Hot Grease Podcast. One of my favorite podcasts, new podcasts that's out right now, it's called Gravy, and it's produced by Southern Foodway Alliance. They do a lot of Southern food stories, and they're on iTunes and all those great podcasting spots.
Terrific. And we're going to link to all these shows on our website. Jenna, how can we hear your shows? And then also, what else should we be looking for?
You can hear my shows by going to BuzzFeed.com/podcast. We have one called Internet Explorer and one called Another Round. And I really love the Gimlet shows. So Mystery Show is really awesome, as we all know. Reply All is really great. All those shows. And if you really want to learn about the podcast industry, listen to the first season of Startup, which is also a Gimlet podcast. So good stuff.
Great. And Matthew, producer of those, how do we hear those? And then what would you send us to?
You can find all our shows at gimletmedia.com, GIMLET media.com. Other shows, Love Another Round, and I'm not just saying that because Jenna's on here. I listen every week. There's a show called Long Form, which is a show that interviews writers about their craft. If you like Fresh Air and Terry Gross, that's kind of a different spin. I love that one.
Terrific. And then, Nicholas, from your perch writing the industry standard newsletter, what would you send people? How do they sign up again, and what would you send people to?
You can sign up for HotPod at tinyletter.com/HotPod, HOTPOD. And I want to call out three shows. The fourth show I was going to call out is Audio Long Form. It's one of my favorites, and it's one of the first I've ever heard and stuck with me for a long time. But I think folks would really enjoy Song Exploder out of the Radiotopia Network. It kind of brings you through the creative process of creating a song from scratch on track-by-track basis, and I think that's a fantastic use of the podcast creative format. I'm also going to plug The Gist, which is a really, really good Slate show. I work with Mike Pesca. He's a wonderful force of nature. I'm also a little bit afraid of him.
Awesome.
And finally, people should check out The Hollywood Perspectives, because I do think that one of the more overlooked companies doing podcasts is Grantland and ESPN more widely.
All right, we got to go. But now, if you wondered where Mike Pesca went, that's where he went. I'm Mark Oppenheimer, sitting in for Colin McEnroe. Thanks to all four of our guests, and I'll be back tomorrow talking about big families.